UAC meeting, January 26th, 2015.
Utility tax. The other one is the obvious pick to keep that going. So. Computer and screen.
No, we don't have the, so I try to have to make some handouts and get to that point. That stuff I probably would have shown on the screen to save some paper, but.
We have lots of trees in there.
So, to bring you up to speed, since you were at the last meeting, Jeff figured out we have $400,000 a year to spend on capital.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
and that's the...
And $1 million budget or something like that.
Those things never add up nicely.
Right.
So that's right. I think we asked Barry to look at the CIP plan as recommended by the consultants and see what could be reasonably pushed out into later years to make the cash flow work without a rate increase, if possible. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would take a rate increase as it's shown in the order to meet the needs that are outlined. Are we going to talk about the utility tax?
Yeah, in a minute. Let's just see if Nancy can give her one more minute. She's going. So we got that, by the way, but if you look at the thing, there's $4 million in revenue, 2.2 in operating expenses, and debt service and millions more. So therefore, you have roughly $400,000.
Here comes somebody, Nancy and Doug, maybe?
Maybe
Nancy didn't know all the way back. No. There she is.
Year.
Yeah, I got a little lost. Okay. Where I was going.
This is the planning department conference room. As opposed to the other. There used to be another conference room out of this other end of this. But it was converted.
A little tiny one, smaller one?
Yeah, right at the other end of the planning. The other end
Right, yeah.
Used to use that. I suppose that's the only deficiency in the design of this building is referring to our new conference rooms out there. All right, we will begin, come to order. Everybody is here except Steve.
Are we ever going to see minutes?
Good question.
I'll ask.
I feel like I can remember what we said.
Yes, I'll ask. Okay, so the meeting come to order. Steve will be absent. Again, reviewing the items on the agenda, we have two, the brief discussion and tax, or the council discussion, and then the continuing the sewer plan. Anybody else want to add anything?
Comments for the good of the order.
Which means anybody can say anything they want about anything.
Okay.
I guess there's a question, which is I'll follow up on about minutes. Maybe Rose has been gone. Okay. Shall we get right into it? So, item three that I sent you to a note that we had made a presentation to the council at the last meeting about the utility tax and fire hydrant charge, and the council had asked at the end, after an interesting discussion, had asked the staff to look into it further. So that's my summary.
I printed off more copies of that little memo.
Great.
So if anybody wants to refer to that.
Yes. So the council did not ask us, this committee, to do anything in particular. I asked Val, as our liaison representative, if they wanted to, they should ask. But we haven't been asked anything in particular to do. Jeff submitted this. So unless, Val, you have any particular feedback, or Barry, you do, just to keep everybody up and to speed, what's happening?
Well, Mike Scott, the new guy, had that one question about understanding, you know, a little more specifically what other cities do with regard to utility tax.
All right. And I said I had one. I'm happy to send that to him or everybody for that matter.
Could you? Okay.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. I have a chart that was produced a couple of years ago, which it doesn't include, it's not just the tax, it's every tax. It's kind of an interesting chart.
It would be.
And it goes on for a number of pages.
That'd be great.
And it tells exactly whether or not what they do with utility taxes, whether they use them for other.
No, all it says is, Mike Scott, the new council member, wanted to know what other cities are doing, essentially.
With the utility tax and the fire hydrants?
No, he wanted to know essentially how many cities impose a utility tax. Essentially, that was his question.
And in general, what's the answer to that?
A lot. And I told him.
Most?
Most, but there's probably 300 cities, and I didn't count this list, but maybe it's 100 or 150 or 200. I mean, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. So I said I had a list, and I'll send it out to everybody. You can see it. I will tell you when you look at it. It's a lot, so you're not going to just print a page. It runs a lot. But all it does is list by cities and the taxes they impose on lots of things, not just water and sewer. It's whoever sorted it in priority high to low of water. You could probably have sorted it by high to low of electric and high to low of everything, or it could have done alphabetically. But whoever did this sorted it by water. So you start at the top with 36%, I think, and goes down. So it's a couple of years old, so I know some changes have been made. For example, I know Seattle's at the 15.4% now. And it taxes its water.
Does city council's decision one way or another on the utility tax issue impact other recommendations that the UAC would have with regard to rates, or is it really just independent?
It's independent to it, really. All we've noted is that a lot of people do it, and there's no max on it. You can do what you want. And some cities, most cities that impose that tax are imposing it on themselves, but others are imposing it on other utilities, other water providers within their boundaries.
Doing it on Meadowmere or something. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Right. Or other governments, like the lawsuit that Wenatchee and Chelan PUD, the city of Wenatchee imposed a tax on itself because it has a water system which serves part of the city, and it imposes on Chelan PUD, which serves part of the city. So it's imposing on both.
Refresh my memory. Seattle's doing it 15.4% on just water?
Yes.
On water? And what is ours?
But they do it on other utilities too, don't they? Like sewer?
Okay, no. I've never looked at that. I guess I can look at the chart.
Yeah. I think they do.
I happen to be talking with a lawyer for Seattle, who city attorney's office, who advises Seattle Public Utility about this question, because they're trying to do some legislative fix to all of this, and she's going, same thing that we're all doing. What helped SPU, Seattle Public Utilities, impacts the general fund, and she said, I've got the Seattle City Council that has one view of this, and the Seattle Public Utility ratepayers have a different view of this. And she goes, no. So it's not an uncommon problem.
What percentage are we charging?
6.
6% on just the people that have Bainbridge Water, right?
And so.
And
storm, citywide storm.
Is it 6% on all three?
Uh-huh. Which is typically kind of the minimum.
Well, actually, it's not.
But
it's the norm. Yes, it's the norm. It's the median. Yeah. If you did a bell curve, it would be. But there are plenty of cities that have 1 or 2%.
Oh, really?
Okay. 3 or 4. It's 8 or 9, 10. It's all over the map. But the big bell curve is at 6 because electric is 6. So people do that. I know, for example, Mukilteo just imposed 1%. Actually, it's not true. They imposed a franchise fee of 1%. So, okay, so I'll get that chart.
So are we more focused not on the stormwater one so much as the water in the sewer one because it's only part of the people being charged it?
Yeah.
That was the recommendation.
That's general? Okay. Yeah. Stormwater is like everybody's getting charged it. We need it for the general fund. It's fair.
It's fair as any taxes. Yeah.
if you're commercial versus residential, you have a different view. Or you know, it's, so even stormwater is subject to Chris and Paul. Single family homes be the same whether it's 600 feet or 6,000 feet, for as an example.
Okay.
So, anybody else on this? I guess not. All right, we'll move on.
What about the fire hydrant? What happened with that?
Well, the council just talked about it all for an hour, and they're thinking about it. And there were lots of different council members had different reactions, different council members had different
I think proposals. I think the two concerns that are coming from different people are, on one hand, the equity issue and where the utility is being taxed and then everybody's getting the benefit. Mm-hmm. And the other side is, you know, a couple people are very concerned about the revenue impact of eliminating the tax. And one thing that I think we discovered in discussion with the city manager after the meeting was that there aren't any franchise agreements with any of these other utilities, which there typically, I guess, are. And so we asked the city manager to have the staff come back to prepare an ordinance abolishing the tax and to come back with suggestions for alternative sources of revenue. So maybe there'll be some discussion of the possibility of negotiating franchise agreements with some of the other utilities. I don't know. But
that's on the water that we're doing with other utilities.
No, we're talking about water systems.
Yeah, but the fire hydrant thing, that's a different issue, right?
It is. It's related because of its impact on the
general fund. As I recall, we were taking
impact on the general fund.
The utilities weren't going to pay a tax on that anymore, and that would take it out of the general fund, but then we're going to ask the reverse, too, right?
Right.
That the so general fund not pay the utilities.
Yeah. So on the franchise fee, Ann asked me about that.
Yeah.
And I happen to have spent a huge amount of time on that subject in my legal world, and have negotiated a number of franchise agreements between cities and counties and districts. It's not an you just can't trade them both, although there's much more to it, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And so at some point, if we want to talk about that, we can talk about that.
That's an added expense. Making these agreements.
Well, it's a totally different.
I think it would be a tremendous expense.
It's a totally different. It's
tough.
A different thing, but it's a different animal. A franchise agreement. Just talk about it. Franchise agreement is an agreement is a contract between a city or a county and utilities, whether public or private, which operate in the right of way. The city or county owns the right of way.
Mm-hmm.
And they control it. And they can give what's called a franchise to a public or private utility to operate in that. And even though it's not a franchise, it's a different kind of franchise. And that becomes a franchise agreement. In the old days, the counties and cities used to think they could just dictate what was in that franchise agreement. And then there was a lawsuit between the city of Lakewood and Pierce County, and the court appeals affirmed that, no, in fact, it's a contract. It has to be agreed to. It's not, I think there's no, they're not, the counties and cities aren't kings. It has to be a real agreement. Therefore, giving power to particularly the water and sewer districts to negotiate something that they'd believe was a little more fair. Anyway, in the middle of those agreements, in the middle of all the statutory and case law on this subject, there's the ability of those, the cities and counties, to charge a fee. Now, it's pretty easy to charge PSE or Viacom or Verizon or something where you're charging a private company. It's a little clearer about the power of the city or county to do that versus charging against a public agency like Sewer District 7 or KPUD or a water district or whatever, because they have their own statutory authority to be in the right way. Anyway, without going on too long here, the statutes give the authorities of the cities and counties to impose a fee. The fee is supposed to be to offset the cost of administering the franchise, which isn't very much. But over the years, cities and counties have negotiated essentially franchise agreements which gave a which create a franchise fee of 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, magically 6% as a franchise fee. And then they wouldn't impose a tax of 1%, 2%, 3%, 6%. So you see many franchise agreements now around in which the payment is a franchise fee of 6%, and therefore the city doesn't impose 6% utility tax because you get the same amount of money. And that's what's happening.
And why is that happening?
Because the cities want the money, and the...
The word tax isn't involved?
Right. The cities want the money, and if they can get it without imposing a tax, they will do it. So many cities now have these franchise fees with districts, which include a franchise fee payment.
Now, if it's a contract, and, like, the Kitsap PUD has to agree to it...
Correct.
Can't they just say, uh-uh?
Yes. Yep. And that's actually what happened in the Lakewood case. The city of Lakewood tried to impose, you love this, a franchise agreement on a sewer utility owned not by a sewer district, but by Pierce County, which owns the sewer system. Mm. So the city and the county were battling over whether the city could impose the tax. And the Court of Appeals said, it's got to be a contract. So, yes.
And that wasn't just because it's the city and the county fighting.
No, right.
So what entices the utility?
That's what I wanted to know.
It varies. Typically what they want, what the utilities want is the city or the county to pay for any relocation costs that the city or the county causes. And so what the districts, typically utilities, want is they want a deal as to how much is it going to cost to relocate things, which can be a big expense. Without that, the cities and the counties can just come in, and I've had clients impacted this, come in and say, we're going to move this, we're going to do a new road project, move your line, I don't care if it costs you $500,000, move it. And they have to, that's what. So,
and if they're paying a fee,
so
the city
as part of the agreement, they negotiate future relocation costs. That's one.
Oh, okay.
And so there's some other terms that get into this, and particularly the utilities then just pass 6% on to their customers, so it doesn't really harm them.
Yeah, but they also got, then they're going to get the relocation. It seems like it's a bad deal for the city, isn't it?
No. The city gets
6%. Depends on the amount of relocation.
Exactly.
And so it may not be much of a carrot either.
Right.
Sitting
and
on my own.
I'm telling you, I'll show you the
sewer district 7.
I'll show you all the 18 to 30 page agreements that you see written up for these franchise agreements. But this isn't
really
the topic.
Sounds like a wash. That you pay the attorney's fees.
Now everybody copies everybody else's. anyhow, I don't want to get, that's enough on this topic. But,
okay.
But the franchise agreement is literally, is supposedly, is an agreement. And sewer district said, why should they agree to it? Because they could just turn around and pass it on to their customers, you see. So it's essentially the same as the Winslow repairs. All right, let's go to the sewer plan. So, at the last time, we went through all the numbers and kind of played around, and we were asked Barry to work his magic and think about what all this means.
So, I'm going to pass out some things. I was going to try to use the board if I could, but we're in this room, so it's going to have to be paper. But this is just a kind of a first, I wouldn't say first pass, but a pass at how we could do things. I'll have to explain it all to you. The front page is the top, is kind of the bottom line, so we kind of have to go to the bottom page and work our way up. Mm-hmm. But
the front page being
the kind of the financial summary, but you need to understand what's behind it to be able to. So if you go to the last page, well, you know, I guess backing up to what we had and what we got in the sewer plan from the consultant, if you remember, they kind of broke down capital projects in short-term and long-term. So next 10 years or 11 years and the next 10 years. So roughly 10-year blocks. No specific year-by-year project recommendation. They just took those 10-year blocks and divided it into an annual number, and that's how they plugged in, we need another $900,000 or so a year in capital. And so what we talked about last time was, well, we obviously can't budget that way in an average manner or even a block manner. We need a specific year-by-year project list. So what we tried to do is we looked on the last page, we looked at all the projects in the short and long term and said, okay, let's take a first pass at really what year would we want to plug those into, project by project. And we did that. That's 20-year CIP, I guess I'd say. And then the next page up is more the six-year. Okay, what's in our next six-year window to meet the requirement, what we think will meet the requirements that they're calling for in this plan, but what we would actually recommend to do in the next 6 years. So that's the 2015 to 2020 recommendation, or just this is a draft now. I wouldn't even say this is our final recommendation, but this is what our pass is, and it's in the last 2 weeks. So basically we looked at, okay, what were the real requirements? And kind of the basis for this is this last sheet I sent out, which it's in a lot of fine print, but basically this tries to document every single pump station, and there's a lot of data on ages of things, quantities, flows. But this analysis or this data collection starts to point out, well, when are things going to age out, like a 20-year? The SCADA system is the supervisory control and data acquisition. Basically, it's the control system and the software that does that. This typically has about a 20-year lifespan. The pump stations in general, the pumps and the general controls, is we're using a roughly a 40-year retrofit. And then there's other factors that the pumps that the sewer plant pointed out that are more capacity-driven, things that are going to get pump stations that are going to reach their capacity in a certain time frame. So we've tried to factor in what we know about the condition, the age, the capacity, and translate into, okay, what is the most critical things to do in the next 6 years, in the next 10 years, in the next 20 years. And so that's what this second page is. So that's what we're saying right now, is looking at what would we recommend that we do to address our most critical needs and to make sure we have a sustainable system. And that's what this list is. So there's some things that are, there's a couple highlighted things on there, because in the middle of the page, there's a couple studies. Typically, those wouldn't be in a CIP. So I have them highlighted here because they're in the CIP, but then I've reflected them in really the professional services line on the budget sheet on the front. And then the lower level one, that's still to be determined, and it's something that we're planning to potentially finance through our trust fund loan anyway. So it may not be, it's not really a cash flow issue for us as much as a long-term debt thing. So, I guess, in brief summary, we have a 20-year CIP based on the data, a recommended six-year CIP, and then you go to the front sheet, okay, and now this is your six-year projected budget that reflects what they did here. That
matches this.
For the first, except for what I've highlighted. So the revenue on the top side matches exactly what the that's the projected revenue the top of this sheet is the projected revenue sources with no rate increase, basically. So what the financial consultant put in there was just a revenue growth based just on growth, generic, organic growth, so new customers, but not new rates. And then the section in the center is all the same expenses, except for what I've highlighted there. And I should have highlighted utility tax, too, just to... I found a little error in what she was doing there. So, and then you get to the capital expenses, and this number that for under design and construction, that line that says design and construction, that reflects this bottom line of this six-year CIP on the second page. So basically, these projects are all now shown in that design and construction line. So if you look at that now, you start getting down to the bottom line of, okay, if you do those projects as recommended, then our cash flow deficit each year is what? You know, 497 is a positive cash flow in 14, but we have some negative cash flows of 500, 200, 300, 168, etc. Then if you cumulatively, on the last highlighted line on the bottom shows, okay, what is our cumulative net negative cash flow? So it adds up to over a six-year period, if we did this and these projects come into this cost, our cumulative negative cash flow is about $2.7 million. So what that equates to is, okay, that's what we could potentially spend from reserve. So if we have a $3.7 or $3.5 million reserve, potentially what this would show is, hey, we could spend those reserves down over 6 years, do the projects we want to do, and not have to raise rates. Now, at the end of 6 years, now we might be at minimum reserves, and now we're at a point of we're not accumulating any more reserves, so now what do? If we let the rates freeze. But I think that's what the committee was interested in, is what is the projects that we would recommend doing, how would that affect our cash flow, and how could we potentially spend our reserves down to a certain degree and still do that. So going back up to the middle, so a couple things I found, the professional services, I've reduced that to reflect and plugged in 2017 and 18 those specific studies that are shown on the second page. So I think our steady state professional services are much less than the 228. It's more around 90. And then if we have a specific study, we could plus up those years. So that line has been reduced. The city utility tax line, the $210,000 in 14 and then up, that was actually being calculated a little bit wrong. What the consultant had done in the expense block is she had just increased all expenses 3.5% a year. Well, the utility taxes doesn't do that. It's a certain fixed percentage of the revenue. So what I did was just make it 6% of the projected revenue. So it makes it go down a little bit. It's just a minor change, but
it's the same.
No, it's not.
No, instead of 217, for example,
it's 211.
211.
It's going 15. So you look at 15.
Two. What number you took on?
I'm looking at the utility tax. Okay. Right. Yeah. So the utility tax going down a little bit, but basically it's $200,000, and then I plugged in the numbers. So this, I know that's a lot to throw at you right away, but we can start walking through it a little bit slower.
And of course, if the city eliminates the utility tax,
then your negative cash flows are much less if you look at that, because our unlike the other utilities, which I think was discussed at council last week, any other utilities is going to put that 6% on top of their rate. We have it inside our rate, so it does make a difference in cash flow for us.
So we haven't gone to the CIP, and I think we ought to do that at some point. But so just... So and we have 3.7 or 3.8 is in our...
I don't have... I was hoping to get an updated number as of... the end of the year. I haven't got it yet, but it's going to be around that. Actually, it might be around 4 even, because we should have increased it last year.
All right. So, as I, big picture, if we add $4 million in 2015, we eat up $500,000, we still have $3.5 million in our reserves, so we wouldn't...
Right.
Same drill. You know, another $200,000 after that.
Right. Each year, you can see, if you didn't put any more rate increases in, then all you did was spend out of reserves, you would deplete it by 2.7. So you still wouldn't probably be in the hole. But then your reserves...
Closer, yeah. It seems to me, looking at these...
I think it's achievable.
Let's not raise rates for several years and look at it in a couple of years and see whether we need to do that.
The projection for the 6 years after that doesn't seem to have as much spending.
Right. Well, there's some things that are... What are you basing
on? I guess I'm just looking at...
Yeah, the six-year CIP average, you're right.
21 to 26.
Yeah, see, the six-year average in the first 6 years is 500 and some, 531.
Right, it drops to 271.
Yeah. And the number, the projects get a little more vague in the out years.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're not figuring in anything major at this point. Because all of the pump stations have been upgraded and improved.
Right.
So are this?
I'm confused. You have $4 million.
I wouldn't raise them just to be safe.
What's that?
You have $4 million in revenue. You have $3.5 million in expenses.
In 2014, but 2014 is a gone year. So I just had that for reference, just to match what she did. But that year is over.
Yeah. So then you have $500,000 left in the reserve.
No, this is just the year-by-year cash flow.
This doesn't have the reserve.
The reserve is something that's accumulated over the last however many years. So the reserve balance, which is basically our savings account, is over $3.5 million.
But that's up here, right?
No, this is just a year-by-year. This is year-by-year cash flow.
You don't have the $3.5 million. This is a different $3.5 million?
Yeah, it's a
different. That's our yearly revenue.
It so happens the number is the same. It so happens the number is the same, close to the same.
Yeah. I mean, I think the projection was for $3.7 million in reserves at the end of last year.
Right.
And of that, $500,000 is allocated to sub-reserve accounts.
Right.
So there's about $3.2 that should be available coming into 2015.
And that includes this surplus from last year.
Well, I don't know. That
no, I don't think it really...
I don't think it does, actually.
Because there's $500,000.
Yeah, no, because actually it was projected to go down.
Yeah, because, we didn't... But it's not going to go down.
Yeah, because the projection for 14 was about a half.
So it's actually going to be more than that.
So it may be more.
I think it will be, yes. Yeah. I don't have the final number, but it'll be. I think it'll be close to 4. But
so it seems like, I do want to circle back to the CIP, but it seems like we could comfortably, if you're comfortable with it, we could say this is a CIP. We don't need to raise rates for a number of years. And look at it again in 2 or 3 years.
So we're going to owe 2.7, but we already have 3.2 in the reserve, and we might have more by the time we get to 2020.
Right.
No,
yes.
Well, by the time we
figure
out what we have at the end of this past year.
We wouldn't owe 2.7. We've been spending 2.7. Yeah.
Out of the 3 point something that we have.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're going to need $2.7 million.
Right.
Cumulatively by 2020, but we have $3.2 million, which would more than cover it in the reserve. Would we be getting additional reserve each year?
Well, potentially. So how you get more reserves is the revenue is pretty fixed, this big expense block in the middle, that's assuming 3.5% growth in every line every year.
Mm-hmm.
It may be more or less than that, probably less. Inflation has been less than 3.5%, but some costs seem to rise more than inflation, medical costs and other things, but some things don't. So it's a matter of the assumption that builds these numbers is that every cost will grow 3% every year. So that's a lot of compounding. It may not happen. So if it doesn't happen, then that creates additional or less negative cash flow, I guess I would say, each year. Because if your expenses really aren't going up that much every year, your revenue is pretty much going to be there because people are on the sewer and they pay their bills. So that's where you could get more reserves.
And if, you know, they vary and staff sharpen the pencil a bit, maybe those expenses can be reduced over time. Hard to know.
And I think we can in his professional services. I've already done, I've reflected some of that.
So we could argue.
You have $500,000 even at the end of 2020 in the reserves, in addition to the 500 you already have in this sub-reserve. So you really have $1 million.
That's just a one-year cash flow, and I don't know how that has affected the bottom line yet.
But remember, we have we have to have a reserve
of $500,000. So you have $3.7 million in the reserve.
Where do you get the 500 from?
That's what you told me.
Yeah, that's roughly what the plan says.
Yeah. You have $3.2 million left, and you need $2.7 million by 2020. So you've got another $500,000. Even after you cover that spread, right?
No.
In theory.
In theory, yeah.
In theory.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're talking about half.
Yeah.
Five.
Okay. So, I guess, so we get $500,000 we can carry over to look at 2021.
And there might actually be more because this surplus hasn't been.
So, but even in that scenario, then, you're looking at, you know, now in 2014, say we got $3.5 million. If we do this, execute all these projects and everything goes as predicted, we'll have $500,000 to work with.
By 2020.
In 2021. And is, you know, then now you're at a point where you need to self-finance everything because you don't really have much reserves to work with.
As a practical matter, you're not gonna do something and then just quit looking at it until 2021.
Exactly.
Look at it in a couple of years.
Because every year projects come in higher or lower. Inflation may or may not be as much. Our operational costs, you know, we have to see what that is.
And things happen.
Yeah, things happen. Growth happens.
So you look at it again next year and see how we're doing.
Every year.
You look at it and go, how are we doing?
Yeah, you don't want to put it in the box and get surprised.
Because, yeah. Andy, the other side, I think, of your argument is saying, based on the known expenditures in the coming years, there's no room to reduce rates. Because I think there's people out there who think sewer rates are high and should be coming down, and this argues for why that's not a good idea.
Well, actually, I could argue that you could reduce rates for a year or two and see where we are, and if you have to then increase them back, so be it. I mean, in other words, you give relief to some people for a couple of years, not a great amount, probably not more than a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue you should reduce it 2%, but for what purpose?
Right. Now, remember the 5%, you have to increase it in a couple of years, far more than the 2%
you gave
today.
That is what I believe.
I don't disagree.
Do we get press that we keep it steady, or you just go in the paper, sewer rates are going to stay the same?
Well, you know, it depends. This is, in the end, we have to have this sewer plan which reflects that. Right now, the sewer plan reflects some pretty significant increases.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me we would want the sewer plan to be modified to reflect this kind of program.
At least for the next couple of years.
Which then you'd say we're passing the sewer plan, which shows no rate increase for 4 or 5 or 6 years to be reviewed periodically.
And it's still taking care of the sewer spills. So,
right.
I mean, I think there's a lot of press about that. So
Mary, of the $15 million, how much of that is not in this page?
$15 million.
Okay, well, the $15 million is what's in this book as the their suggested projects for to 2035.
Right.
And so, but your third page spreadsheet. Doesn't total $15 million, right?
No, I should have brought that other. Make a copy of everything. It doesn't reflect everything. It defers some things out, such as the outfall extension, and
yeah, 2035.
Yeah, and.
I had a question about that outfall extension too. Somebody asked me this. The if you take this pipe out further into the Sound, there's this tendency of the water to flush back toward the shore is what somebody was telling me scientifically, because there's some kind of thing that
they do what's called a drogue study, where mm-hmm. they put these little floats with parachutes on the end that ride the currents,
mm-hmm.
and
it's not coming back.
Can show exactly where
it's
that gets
out.
Dispersed and what shoreline does it end up on,
okay.
and that's the whole basis of why, how much of a diffuser, how far out you need to go.
Mm-hmm. So they've already done all those studies to make sure that we're not just going to do it right back in and fall out.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's treated.
Well, it is treated, yes. But that treatment doesn't get everything out, as we know.
Still not good for the gooey ducks, apparently.
Should we look at the CIP just to see if we're comfortable with that?
So, like I said, it's...
chart 9-3 is their $15 million list.
Yeah, and I had so,
9-3 carries, it's on two pages there, and they propose that they have $15.8 million, and they have $10 million in
really 15.9.
15.9, yeah. $10 million in short term and after 9.
5 and a half.
It's after page
9-13.
Yeah.
Is that what you're thinking?
And this is 9-3. Okay, yeah.
And it goes over to the next page, too.
Yeah.
So that's what they have on their list, which ends up in then the table 10.6, which is the short term. Got us the $900,000 a year in capital. So, all right. So, what you've done, Barry, is say, here's what we got to fix around our house for the next 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what we've tried to meet what's identified in this plan, which plus other known things
right.
that.
Why don't we just talk to you real quickly? There are only 10 or 12.
So, lower level beach mains is a ongoing project. Or it was related to the beach main project that we just did. It was taken out because it was not considered as critical. We're looking at options for how that could be done. And we still have trust fund loan capacity to pay for this. So, it would be just rolled into our debt service. So, it wouldn't necessarily be a... We'd have to pay for it, but it wouldn't be a hit on our reserves because we'd be able to finance it out. That's why it's yellow. Sewer main upgrades is really just $50,000 a year. That's just small projects that come up. It gives some money to do repairs and replacements as identified throughout the year. Upgrade Wing Point Way sewer mains, that's already included in a project that's underway, under design and to be built this year, which is the widening of Wing Point Way.
Is that really going to get built this year?
That's for a season short.
Yes.
Got my fingers crossed.
Yeah.
We've been talking about that for
We got the money.
Years.
We just got to get it designed and permitted, and we're ready to go, right?
And we're at about 60% design, so.
Yeah. So, you know, the money, we have a grant for most of it, except for the utilities, the $1 million in water and sewer. Then SCADA, I mentioned that's the supervisory control and data acquisition. That's what that means. But basically, it's the software and computer system that controls your remote pump stations as well as the treatment plant. Anyway, it's a software thing. So you need a server. The server's... dated and can't be updated anymore, so that's that replacement. And then rehabilitate pump station. The first pump station, really, that the highest priority is the village pump station for rehabilitation and capacity increases. That's the village pump station is there by the village, by Wells Fargo and that area. It mm-hmm. takes care of the whole village and And the whole northern part of the urban area was the high school, the schools, all the way up to the middle schools at Woodward and Sakai Village and Northtown Woods. And it's a lot of collection area. But anyway, so $50,000 would be to start the design and then to try to do construction. The $400,000 next year is the construction. So that's what that 2015 program is. And you keep moving your way down. Mm-hmm. Once again, we start based on this analysis that I showed you of what each pump station needs. We started looking at, okay, which pump stations needed their software controls upgrades in what year, and we started bunching those together. So three stations in 2016, those are Ferry Terminal, Lower Level, and Lower Holly. Based on our analysis of aging and condition, we think we needed to work on those control systems. Then you start working your way down. Sunday Cove Pump Station, that's has deficient capacity, and the pumps are 38 years old. If you look in the remarks column, so that's the, kind of the next one that pumps up pops up that we need to work on. Rehabilitate Wing Point Way Pump Station. That's we have problems there with submersion during high tides. And then if you look your way down. Skate upgrades the next two pump stations, Island Terrace and Klickitat. Rehabilitate old treatment plant pump station. Once again, $40,000 would be design, $380,000 would be construction the next year. Then the plan recommended evaluating the new Brooklyn Force Main that we talked about last time about the issues of undersized line. Existing pump stations are competing against each other on that same line. Plus, we have projected growth up there, so we really need to look at studying that and coming up with a plan to fix that or do something differently. If it's upgrade the pumps or if it's do something with the line. So that's a study. So I highlighted it as $50,000 study, but I put it in the professional services line on the budget just to have it show up. And then there's several more pump station.
So this is another liability waiting to happen at some point.
Yeah, it's identified.
Post study.
Yeah, it's identified as a plan. I mean, in this plan, as something that's a current capacity problem, and
so there will be construction that's not reflected in this particular.
Potentially, yes. Except there is construction. Right now, the plan says the next project down says rehabilitate Woodward Pump Station.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This plan says rather than do anything with the force main, just upgrade the pumps. And before we would do that, we would want to make sure that's going to really fix the problem. And that's really what we need to do.
Okay, I'm looking at Northtown and Woodward pump stations, and there's a $40,000 and $50,000. Are those also study expenses?
No, those are design.
Design.
You really can't design and construct in the same year. It's pretty hard. So
what I'm saying is, are we going to do the study before you do the design and construction?
Well, we would probably
the other two.
We would the study would inform those two probably.
So they would have to precede it.
Pre-design study and then design.
Okay.
So.
Because those are fluid then, right?
Yeah, I mean, everything's a little bit fluid. But,
let's not make sewer jokes.
Before we would design a pump station fix, we would need to do a pre-design study or some kind of study that would tell us, is that really the thing to do, or should we look at the line itself? You know?
We all know that out there, too, particularly, you may have a developer.
You might have a developer. You might have what happens, like we mentioned, if we wanted to get serious about sewering Island Center.
Yeah.
And we put that capacity on this line, what does that do to us? So that changes the equation, obviously, too.
Just this little nugget right here has got more uncertainty attached to it than the rest of this chart.
Yeah, because amongst the other pump stations, we have we know condition, we know age, and we know pretty well
flow
projected flow. So we know based on the current zoning if they're going to have capacity issues and in what year, and that's
right.
And so those are really more certain. Yes,
it just seems like in this particular bunch, the study is going to be more important.
Plus,
going forward in order to project everything.
It would, I think so. And so that, yeah, that's Northtown Woods and Woodward. And then we still have, that's right. Those are the main two. Yeah. And then we get back into just normal, known pump station rehabilitations that need to happen, lower level, lower Holly. Then we look at, we need a big, another unknown is really what do we need to do and when on the treatment plant. There's some things that we believe in the six-year plan, we don't really need to do anything significant, and potentially the next project down is the only big one, and that's influent pipe improvements. But the rest of the pump station, or the treatment plant systems, there are operational changes and minor tweaks to how we operate the plant that really need to be done and then play out before we would recommend any major projects. But we need to look at the study that, look at the elevations throughout the plant and the capacities of each piece moving forward. So that's what that 165 is. And that's, once again, that's yellow because it's in the professional services line.
Why is the professional services yellow? We
typically
spend it, right?
Well, we're going to spend it, but we don't. It's not really a capital cause. It's in the CIP.
Oh, okay.
But you got to spend the money. But technically, we would budget for it in an expense line, not a capital line.
Okay.
Million, yeah. Right here.
And so I've reduced the. If you look at the.
I get it.
Yeah, okay.
So the study is going to be what tells us is in the short term.
Yeah.
Wastewater treatment plant improvements.
Yeah. So that's, we're saying we probably ought to look at getting a study going by then to start projecting future treatment plan improvements. And then long-term wastewater treatment plan improvements would depend on maybe a study farther down the road.
So that study could end up throwing the future years way out of whack. It could, but
the plan is looked at. It has some treatment plant projects identified.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are, there's some long-term improvements, and then most of the short-term ones are around the outfall extension. So it's identified about $5 million in total plan improvements potentially. We're not sold that we need to do all those. So it would really need more study. And also, it depends also on really what. How are your flows growing? Are you really achieving the growth that's predicted? Per capita flows continue to go down. So even though you might realize the growth, per capita flows are going down. So your overall plant flow may not be growing as much as this predicts.
More efficient washing machines and things.
Well, yeah. I mean, all the new housing has low flow toilets and low flow. Most people buy low flow washing machines now and dishwashers. And, things are much more efficient, and people are more conscious, I think, of it. And so, per capita flows are coming down.
And to get back to something Andy says, what you were saying is, if a developer comes into the Northtown Woods or Woodward area and wants to further develop, they might contribute some of the money to upgrading the force main or whatever the pump stations, depending on what the study says. That's another unknown.
Well, yeah, they could come in and say, I want to build whatever, and we say, well, we need an evaluation of the force main. We have a model now, and it says, well, it's going to be undersized, or it's going to over. So now they need to do something. We can't approve the development unless they
chip in
or do an improvement.
So that's something we can't consider right now. We just know that that could be out there.
Could drive it, yeah. And the Island Center would be another thing, right, if we decided to do something there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is helpful.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So, I don't know why, but I have this, I think I've heard somewhere along the line that the sewer plant has a very expensive SCADA system, and when it was installed, and I don't know. I see it scattered throughout here,
yeah.
A lot of upgrades to that system, but without a sense of how much of this budget is in a replacing or upgrading that former system.
Well, we're not really upgrading. It's most of the pump stations, really, that are aging out on the SCADA system. It's not necessarily the treatment plant. But I don't know about. I'm not sure about the thought that that was an expensive system. I'm not sure. I don't know much background on that. We just know that this technology evolves. And like all computer technology, and things get aged, and they don't have replacement boards, and they don't have replacement software patches, and all those things that Microsoft is always doing. So you gotta upgrade them. But and typically, what we've tried to do is we try to identify those standalone projects for pump stations like ferry terminal, lower level, and lower Holly. Those, we believe, the SCADA systems need to be replaced early. Other pump stations, if it looks like we're going to get to them as far as, you know, an overall rehab, we would include them there, too.
So, in addition to being able to monitor what goes on, I mean, do they produce useful information as to pumping flows and when they're occurring?
Yeah, they typically don't give you flow.
Even running time?
Yeah, running time. So you have to convert the flow to them. Mm-hmm. You know, so it depends. If they're fixed speed, then if you have variable speed, then it's hard to convert.
Yeah. Yeah, so. But I mean, in terms of knowing capacity, obviously, if you see the pump is running an awful lot.
Right, and that's what this sheet tries to show, I think, is that, you know, how many times an hour do they cycle, or how many times a day do they cycle. So basically, there's data collected. All this flow and cycle data in this yellow block here is really all from the SCADA system, is how many times did that pump station come on every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so if something's cycling a lot, then you know, well, something it's
440.
Yeah.
Yeah, village. Yeah.
Max, you know, so that means max flow, and most, you know, typically a sewer system is kind of based on max daily flow and peak flows, and so if it takes 400 cycles or something to do that, then that's concerning. It's coming. That's why you see the village pump station is.
Just want to know about INI at that point.
Yeah, is cycling a lot during high flow times.
Mm-hmm. So can these also help you identify where the INI problems are?
Do you get
not only have the cycles, but you can correlate them to.
The peaking factor. Mm-hmm. So the peaking factor is your INI. So if it's 10 cycles a day during dry weather and it's 400 during wet, well, now there's a lot of INI there because you know the base flow doesn't increase that much. So
it was kind of a double-edged comment by the consultants when they said, well, you don't have much of an INI problem, but yet you have to build the damn plant for the capacity of all that INI that we get. And so it's hard to say that we should emphasize addressing that issue, because the consultants kind of basically say, well, you don't really have a big INI problem.
Well, that's true, yeah, kind of relatively, you know, relative to other systems, but
right. Then
you still have to deal with the reality of your own system. Well,
yeah. If
we still only have a limited footprint of a treatment plant and we can't really expand that, then
INI
the only way to get
easy
capacity is to reduce INI. So
right. Some
people have much more real estate and could put in more plant, and it may be cheaper to do that than to try to fight INI.
Yeah.
Because when you build plant, you know you're getting that capacity. INI, you're hoping you're reducing it, but you know, you don't know for sure until you start draining again. You see, did it really reduce the INI or not? You know, it's kind of a little bit uncertain.
Just so I understand this, the average daily cycles, which at the village is 221, can go up as far as 440, so that tells you there's a lot of INI happening in that one because it doubled so much.
Yeah, so that's a peaking factor. See, I mean, in rough terms, you could say the peaking factor there is 2.
That, though. But then there's 84 and 342.
Well, lower Holly, and that's one of the three that are going to get replaced first.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it's a smaller system, a smaller pump station. But
yeah, so they're older, so they're getting infiltration.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, you know, what part of town do they serve? They serve newer development or older parts of town that have older pumps, pipes in the ground, that kind of thing.
Very terminal. That's not the same thing as the one that sits on a big drive or whatever it is.
Well, there's the one over by the condos. Right. That's the big one. That's SR-305, we call it. Oh. And that's a huge, that's the biggest pump station. Ferry terminal is just the ferry terminal. It's a small pump station.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two cycles away. Can't be that same station.
No, that's a small one. So all that one does is take the ferry terminal and pump it up to Winslow Way so it can gravity back down to the other one.
All right. This is good.
So I guess what I would say is don't hold me to this. I gave you a gut feel last time that I thought we could probably. Obviously, we need to spend the reserves on something. So we need a plan to how quickly or how much are we, how comfortably are starting to spend some of the reserves on what projects, and how long would that potentially last before we might deplete them or get down to a policy level where we wouldn't want to go any deeper. So this is kind of a first cut of, well, probably we could take care of the critical things and stay on schedule.
So why wouldn't we just, sounds good to me, why wouldn't we just replace these pages with what you've just done?
Well, I think
now, when you go back to consultants and ask them what they think about this, but why wouldn't
we? I'm not sure I want to replace it other than it's more of a refinement. Okay, these are two kind of karate chop and big 10 and 20 year blocks. Now let's look at a realistic, just the next 6 years.
Well, great. Yeah. So instead of this 10-10, which is this, why wouldn't we be using this 10-10?
Or just amend it.
I see what you're saying.
Because here, the council's approve a plan. And why would we approve this plan when we're not going to use it? Let's put this in
for 10-10,
and say and we're going to make this the 6-year CIP, and ask the consultants to modify the plan to reflect the CIP. I mean, they were just doing averages. You're doing it with intelligence behind it. Mm-hmm. So let's just say this is it. The council can approve what's a real plan, albeit one that likely will change, but that's what the plans are.
All right.
And this covers all the same stuff that's in that 10-10?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've tried to use, at least for the expenses and the revenues, I've tried to reflect exactly the numbers that were in her plan, except for those things I highlighted there.
And then the council's approving and accepting, and I mean, there's a lot in here, which is really good, and accepting a plan which has, now back to the
10-10 is the culminating
which
plan.
Which has rates, stable rates for the next 6 years, so 3 to 6 years, until we decide you have to spend more money or raise rates. But this projects out. Mm-hmm. Somewhere, it would be nice in 10-10 to have a reserve. To have a modification at the top saying
projected reserve balance or something.
And then a projected reserve balance.
Yeah, well, I can do that. I can add that easily because then
we can see it all in one page.
Right.
It's black, so that's good, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is right now.
Positive balance.
Let's see, overspend it. Yeah.
And plus, it would then show graphically what this does to the reserve balance. And you can see, okay, in 3, 4, 5 years, we're going to have to increase rates because we don't want to get...
So they could adopt this and say every couple of years we've got to reevaluate whether or not we're staying on schedule with the reserve.
And the practical matter, this committee would look at this every year. Every year, you'd say, okay.
Right, so do our expenses really go up as predicted, or are they less or more?
Uh-huh.
And our cash flow is higher or lower than it was we thought it'd be?
And it seems like a fairly assertive repair schedule, which is a good thing because...
Well, yeah, it's not like we're saying we're not going
to
do anything.
We're not waiting for things to explode on the beach.
Right? No.
So that's a good thing.
And the backup is really good because there's a logic to why are you doing it. Right? Because it's old and it's got the cycle.
It's very impressive.
There's a method to the matter.
And the other thing that, it's not as much of a factor, but eventually it becomes a factor, is that, you know, we have... You know, this is our debt service. So eventually, debt service gets retired, and so we essentially get some capacity, budget capacity. But that's you know, the first significant drop is pretty far out there. So
25, yeah. So at least if you get out to 20, you know, which is a possibility that we can see, you can start saying, well,
it's a temporary.
Okay, we may be able to start financing some of this again.
Right. That keep it, flatline the debt service.
So on the lower level, you know, replacement, that $600,000 that's budgeted for that, if you said that one of the options was slip lining that.
Well, yeah, and I don't know. We've been looking at it even today. I think Patty was out there looking at it, and I didn't hear about what was. There's a lot of complications to that line, getting access. Some of it's on the beach, some of it's kind of on the trail. There's not many manholes. There's a lot of clean outs. Mm-hmm. So you still have to excavate areas to get up to be able to pull a line through there. And then there's also some issues right now. Continuous issues with grease and some bellies in the line. Mm-hmm. So if you slip line a bellied line, a depressed line, maybe for a period of time it'll be smooth enough, but eventually that belly will start to accumulate. And right now we have to do a lot of flushing, a lot of jetting out, because we have some restaurants down there and some other things that create some grease problems sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so we're constantly having to flush that line out because of that. So slip lining may not correct that. It won't correct that. It'll make it better for a short period of time. So we have to really do a little more
redesign.
A little more thinking on that one and investigation before we come up with a plan. And, you know, it was part of the beach main project that we did this year, which is those lines were all pressure lines. Those are force mains. This is a gravity line, so it's not under pressure. So we haven't had the known leaks that we know of, because there's nothing really forcing it out. We've had a couple issues, minor spills, but they've been mainly related to grease and plugging up kind of issues and overflows versus breaking.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the technical too much, but, you know, I remember you were talking about, you know, in these pressure lines, you don't want them too big because you need to keep things moving.
Right.
So, but how do you avoid that problem on a gravity line of things just settling out and when the flows get real low?
Well, there's minimum slope, so there's, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, depending on the size of the line, the smaller line has a steeper slope. So if you have there's a DOE design guidance book on that, but basically if a big round line, it can be very flat, and a smaller line needs to have more slope on it. And but everything's supposed to flow downhill, so if you have settlement, then that's a problem, because then you're going to have at high flows it'll flush out, but eventually it'll hold some of the flow getting trapped, and then that's where grease builds up, and then you start having plugs and things. And
so, do we all recommend that they make these changes? What do they think?
I agree.
Yeah.
So, can you do that? How do we do that?
Well, I guess we can work with the consultant and give them the input that reflects what we think is the best picture at this point in time.
Seems like you'd have to change that table.
We have to change some things.
A couple
at the
of
bottom.
Tables, that table 9-3.
That's why I was. Yeah. You know, I need to look at it a little closer. I don't want to pay for too much time for them just to delete stuff they've already done. If we can some way build off of it, make it not look like it, you know, maybe just change the end recommendation here and provide this additional granularity, I guess.
So not sub it in and have them approve it, just say, give it to the city council. This is it, but this is the addendum of some sort that controls.
It's going to be an awful lot easier for the council to understand what they're getting if they get a sewer plan that has it all in the plan.
Right.
But your point is that we can accomplish that by just...
Yeah, I want to try to not have to do too much rewriting and see if they can just revise it and make it look like it flows into, well, we took a rough cut and now here's the
maybe 10,
more detailed
11
cut. Yeah, another extension of the chapter or something to make it flow without having to do too much rework. I don't know. We'll see.
All right, we'll let you do it.
Right.
Great.
Okay.
So I think where we're going is that fine-tuning, and then we would have a document that we would recommend to the council to be approved, and tell the council that we've worked on it, worked with staff and massaged it, and come up with a CIP we're all comfortable with. And
so it could be like, based on this, it's projected that we shouldn't have to raise, we could have sufficient reserves to fund this plan for the next 5 years or 6 years, but recommend that it be evaluated every year to make sure that the plan is tracking and adjustments might have to be made, and rate, to ensure that revenues are keeping up and that we're not depleting our reserves too quickly, something like that, which we need to do.
Way clearer to me.
Okay, are we done with this item? All right, this is a good project. So
great
let's
job.
Talk about.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is helpful. This is good. All right, let's talk about. Anybody got any subjects for the good of the order? And then what do we do next time?
Bullhawks.
Sounds like good of the order to me.
Okay.
No cheese.
Ronald isn't here tonight. We're going to get out early. We can all handle that.
He's at the other meeting.
Oh. Well, that's a hickory
green. Are we going to prohibit clam chowder, perhaps?
So I guess just to clarify, so if we get that done, we bring back a draft, and then the committee would be ready to say, let's move this forward to the council?
Yeah, what we have done in the past is write recommendations for us. We could do a really short one-page recommendation which says we reviewed it and we met with the consultants and the staff, and we therefore recommend it be approved. Notes and key issues.
Yeah, whatever you're done.
Okay.
The conclusion, I think, is to tell the council, note a 6-year CIP that we all believe is a realistic one, and projected operating expenses and capital, and
we'll do that.
We don't envision a rate increase for a number of years. Now, a caveat to that is that we have not, as I said, sharpened a pencil on operating expenses.
And that's what I was getting at, is we still, the committee still wanted to do any more work on the rest of the plan.
This is just me, and everybody's free to talk about it. I think we want to get back to the stormwater utility.
Well, yeah, I'm anxious to do that.
And it would be helpful perhaps sometime later in the year when you look at, I know we're going to buy in the budget by then, but you might be worthwhile looking at the next fall, any operating expenses, alterations. I assume you're going to do that. You do that on an annual basis.
Right, on the CIP. Well, I don't know, because it's a 2-year budget. So, we would really need to do it, because I think adopting this plan still doesn't change the official CIP. We still need to get a CIP in front of council that says this. We're amending now the 2-year CIP to show these actual projects so we can move forward with them.
Right. Yeah.
And then we have the water plan coming within a couple months, probably. That's going to be similar to this as far as format.
Right, which is why I think we would conclude this, get back to stormwater, and then pick up the water.
Right, when it comes next.
And then we can do water, and then we can stormwater, and then we can retire.
Well, then we'll be into the then we'll be into the monitoring and adjusting, right? Is the plan going the way it's supposed to go, right?
That's right. Which is always fun.
Yeah.
And has anything exploded?
Yeah, project costs or whatever.
All right, so next time, then, we'll pick back up stormwater. We can dust that off again,
I guess.
Yeah. I'm not sure what we've done a while, so I'm not sure what we have to do with that.
Trying to think, how far did we get? We got almost to the...
We're almost getting into what should the stormwater system be doing? Should be doing everything it's doing.
Yeah, that way we're into talking about discretionary versus mandatory and policy decisions on what...
And the newly standards that are coming into play.
Well, yeah, the new permit requirements, whatever those might be, but we're probably to do some refresher. Or something.
Yeah.
We're going. So.